This is the Capture Your 365 podcast, a podcast about everyday photography for everyday photographers. This is episode number 2, That's Your Talent, recorded on August 14th, 2013.
Hi, everybody. This is Katrina Kennedy with Capture Your 365. Welcome to the CY365 podcast. I'm here today with my co-host, Kelly Buss. Kelly, why don't you go ahead and say hello?
Howdy.
Yeah, you already had to do that once.
I know. I'm sorry.
Kelly and I had a beautiful, beautiful intro. It flowed. It was amazing. And then I realized I had not pressed record. So I did press record this time, Kelly. So it's the real deal. Excellent.
I'm here. Hello.
You are here. We are both here and excited to be here. This is episode number 2. So it's real now, Kelly.
Yeah. We're coming back.
We're coming back. We wanted it to be real. That was the episode 1, and here we are again. So now we are real. Today we're talking about a topic that was provided to us through Facebook, one that I think everybody will benefit from, and an essential topic to photography. So whether it's everyday photography, portrait photography, whatever it might be for you, absolutely an essential topic. But I want to get to that sponsor message, get that taken care of, because I think you're all going to want to hear it, and then we'll dive into our topic for today. So today's episode is brought to you by Your Life Captured Through the Lens. It is a 6-week online class that moves you from auto mode or whatever mode you might be shooting in to full manual mode. You get 6 lessons with videos and a forum and class gallery where you get lots of support and lots of help getting to you to be, And now I'm like stumbling over my mouth. People don't usually do that, huh? Stumbling over my tongue. So Kelly, I believe this is a class that you, one of the classes that you took at Debbie Hodge before I moved him over to Capture Your 365. Is that right?
I did. I started at Debbie, and then when you launched your own site, I followed you over to your site, and I've taken it 2 or 3 times since then and sat in, and I still pull up the material every once in a while when all of a sudden I think, oh, am I still doing this? Or, you know, to make myself try again or learn again. So, yeah, I do.
Nice. And, you know, I made some changes to the class and to the formatting of the class when I moved it over to Capture Your 365. So it kind of looks nice and spiffy new now and has some new content in there. It is really my favorite class to teach. We always get a good crowd that's enthusiastic about moving their camera to manual mode. And I feel like you can just feel the energy and see the light bulbs going off for people as they learn to take control of their camera. Because once you've got that manual mode and all the technical side down, you can dive into the creative side and not have to think it through so much, which is such a benefit to learning how to shoot in manual. Even if you don't always shoot in manual, just knowing how will be a huge, huge tool in your toolbox. So, Kelly, we have one piece of mail I want to share today. This is from Peggy P., and she was addressing it to you, so I thought you would appreciate this. You know, in episode 1, we talked a little bit about my hoarding instinct with photos and your need to throw them away. So Peggy said, Kelly, I have to agree with you about the old photos. We, too, have pictures from my in-laws and my parents and other family members that we need to go through. Those that don't really speak to us will have to go, and the rest we're going to scan into our computer. So we put them on discs to share with the rest of the family. Good project for the winter months. So you're not alone, Kelly.
Woohoo! I'm not crazy, and I'm not unsentimental.
Yes, you know, yes.
Unfeeling or cold. Not that you've accused me of that, but I know other people in my, you know, immediate real life family sometimes are like, oh, you just don't want to keep anything. So no, okay. Not true.
You want to be able to treasure what really matters.
Exactly. If you keep everything, then nothing's really treasured versus, you know, sometimes if you have to pick, that's what you really, really treasure. So.
Well, you know, I thought a lot about what you said last time, and about culling your photos. And you know, I'm living literally in the midst of a remodel, and my house is a disaster. There is stuff that doesn't belong in every room because we've emptied 3 rooms in our house out, so that you know they all had to go somewhere. So I am really thinking that I need to take on your more is less. Or less is more. See, I can't even do it. Like, that's how caught up I am in it, huh? Less is truly more. Like, I'm gonna get there. So, maybe not with my photos right away.
That's okay. That's all right. You know, and I'm not saying it has to be for every part of your life or every piece of, compartment, but sometimes it makes things a little bit easier, sometimes in some parts of it. So.
Yeah. So, do you hoard anything? Do you have like anything that you just can't get rid of?
Maybe pens and pencils. I'm
Okay,
looking at my desk and I do hoard pens and pencils. I'm a freak and I only use certain ones. I mean, yesterday we bought some school supplies and my husband was quite irritated because I would only buy Ticonderoga pencils and I couldn't find them. So I hoarded them and I have 200 Ticonderoga pencils now when I found them. So
that's pretty funny.
there you go.
I went school shopping yesterday too, and there was a choice between the Ticonderoga pencils, number two, and some off brand, and the price difference was pretty substantial.
Yeah.
But like you, I had to get the Ticonderoga.
See,
There you
this is why
go.
we're meant to be together. It's
I
perfect.
guess so. I guess so. All right. Well, let's go ahead and dive into our discussion topic today.
Okay.
Are you ready?
I am ready. I am.
Okay, cool. So today we are talking about light. And as you know, we have to have light for photography. It is literally capturing light that you're doing when you hold that camera up to your face, even your phone, whatever, however you're getting, creating that image, you've got to have light as the common denominator for every device. So I just wanted to talk about how we see it and what we see. And so, Kelly, you know, I think one of the things that a lot of people get caught up on is what is good light. And I think for new photographers, especially, they don't, for lack of a better term, they don't really see the light. So when you look at light, what does good light really look like to you?
Well, I really, when I started my journey into photography, I didn't look for the light. And that's something that has really developed and I've seen improvement. So I was thinking about this and I thought there are three things that I usually look for. Now, this is not, when I'm just shooting off my hip and I'm just trying to, but when I really start trying to plan a shot, I'm definitely looking for contrast in the light, meaning I'm looking for some sort of shadows to give depth. You know, if I all of a sudden notice that there are really nice shadows falling around one of my kiddos, or if I'm on the deck and I notice the shadows are falling nicely to the trees, that always catches my attention because it creates more depth in the picture. Another thing I always look for, and this is one that everyone looks for, is warm light. That's why we love sunsets and sunrises and that glow time of the day. What do they call that? The perfect hour,
The golden
the
hour.
golden hour,
The
thank you. The
golden
golden
hour,
hour.
yeah.
The golden hour, because it's that beautiful light that is just so lovely on our skin and it just captures beautiful pictures. And then the other thing is that it's not too harsh or too dark, that somewhere in the picture, you kind of got that nice mid-tone of light where you're not getting too like bright faces or too harsh of shadows. Or what do you think? You look for those things?
Yeah, well, I probably look at the color of the light before anything, which is the warmth that I like my light to have a really nice, almost golden, but I love when you get it right before it's golden. And
Right.
then, like you, I go for an evenness, and I probably look for less contrast than you do. And I think if you look at both of our photos, you can kind of see that. I like to really avoid too much shadowing unless I'm kind of intentionally working with a shadow. So I will look out my front window in the morning. It's one of my favorite things to do. I'll raise the blind and look out the front window and see like what color light do we have this morning, and that color will often determine whether or not I'm going to go outside and shoot something. And then as the day progresses, I'm a lot like you, that I really don't want to have that harsh, dappled, spotty light at all. And I want it to have that even light that you really get best on an overcast day. Obviously, you can't have an overcast day every day, but that's the ideal light that I like to shoot in. So knowing that you've got the that you like light in a certain way, do you find that there are places that you go around your house or when you're out and about that you look for the light and that you like to find that the light is best in?
Absolutely. And I think that that develops as you study the day and the time of the day, like you said. So in the morning, I know that if I want to take a good picture, obviously I have to be on the east side of my house to get good light. And
Ah.
I have a big front door, a giant front door with a big glass, storm door on the front. So if I need to set up something or grab a quick picture of a kid that I'm trying to plan, I'll plop them on the floor in front of that door and open the door. And sometimes I step out on the porch, so I shoot into the house and get the reflection, or sometimes I'm in the house from the side. That creates quite a bit of contrast because, the side of their face is really well lit and one side is softer because it's on the shadow side. So I just follow it around during the day. So if it's late in the day, then I'm on the west side of my house. I'm on my deck and enjoying the sun that's coming from the sunset. I have a wide open horizon, so I get that gorgeous light all day somewhere if I can follow it.
Yeah, and it is about knowing where you're going to get your light because my light's completely opposite.
Exactly.
My evening light is best on the west side of my house. I have a large tree, so it gives us nice shade, and I can actually get some pretty decent light under that tree almost any time of the day. But it's that late evening when the sun's setting to the west that I get the nicest light over my garden, and so I will often shoot there. But then if I go to the east side of my house late in the day as well, I've got two other trees that provide a big shade cover, and I get that very indirect light, and we get some light bounced off of the sidewalk and of the blacktop. Since you and I live in kind of completely opposite places, I have a security door where you have a storm door. So I get that road and sidewalk light that bounces back onto my son or whoever happens to be my victim in front of my house, that is on the east side of my house. And then I always, 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 and I think people are probably sick of me even talking about it, I can go to my laundry room, which it faces north, and that the north light that comes into my laundry room is some of my best light in my house. And so I'll often do little photo shoots with Legos or dinner or whatever it might be on the top of my washing machine because that light is really best. And I'm actually losing that shooting location as we speak. So it'll be interesting when we get our new laundry room all set up to figure out how my photography is going to change.
Well, and you're really fortunate that it's on the north side of the house because that keeps you nice lighting all year round.
Exactly,
My house, the
exactly.
way it sits on my property, once that sun shifts to the north, about October to November through March, I don't get a lot of direct sunlight into my house. It's all just, ambient light. And
Yeah.
I can't take pictures hardly at all unless I'm right next to a window or changing some settings or, really get into that later. But I just can't. I love the other 9 months where I can take pictures so much easier because the sun is actually coming into my house instead of just being too far north.
Yeah, we definitely have an advantage over you on that. I get those darker months too, but definitely not as dark as you get. And I can almost always go to that room to get light. In fact, I think we may ultimately, we're not doing this now, we may be putting in French doors in my laundry room for no purpose other than better light for photography. Because they go to the dog run. So my dogs are going to have these beautiful doors so
Well,
that I can take photos. That's so far down the line, though. We're not doing that now. Could we add something silly to this whole silly project? And that would be it. So did you ever have a day or a point in your photography where you wandered around your house and really studied the light?
I did, and I wish I could remember which class it was of yours that I think that was even one of your assignments, maybe. And I did it for that. Do you remember if that's in one of the
I it is, and I can't remember. I think it's either in your kids or your life.
Right.
But I think we do something similar to that in almost every class because there's such a benefit of walking
Right.
around and seeing, like at noon, from noon to 1 o'clock in my office, is when I get the best light. It's on the south side of the house. The light's directly overhead, so I don't have any direct light coming into the office. But if I wait another half an hour, the light is harsh, and you get the you know you can see it on the ground. Like right now, I
Right.
can't see any light on the floor, so I know that that's going to be much better light to shoot in. So the more you can walk around, and you have some outbuildings, and you have a covered porch too, don't
Yeah,
you?
I do. I have a giant covered deck, and I have a couple of barns, one that has more of a rustic feel to it, and it creates beautiful light where I can. Like you were talking about, it bounces off the pavement into the covered area of the barn, and I can get beautiful light. And then I also get a little bit more of a rustic looking backdrop instead of, necessarily my garage or something a little less picturesque. So,
Yeah.
yeah.
It makes a big difference, and that's one of the things that we talk about a lot, or you'll read, is the open shade, and that's just really that covered area where your subject looks towards the light source, and you get the nice even light on them without having the harsh shadows, and really becomes the go-to thing if you're shooting it at times of the day when it's difficult.
Right.
So
But
in oh, go ahead, go ahead.
I would say, well, the challenge then becomes is trying to creatively use those situations or those places on my property over and over again without every picture looking the same, without, oh,
Right.
got her kid standing in the barn door again. There he is
Yeah.
in the barn door again. There he is in the front, step again. And that's the challenge for me right now more than anything is now that I've identified these places, is trying to find new places. And trying to change up the existing places so it's not always the same look of, this is it. This is all I can do,
Right. That's such a good point because I think, for you and I and for many people who take a lot of photos, it's really easy to shoot for good light. So we kind of create these situations with at good times of day with great light. But the reality is, if we're shooting for, everyday photos, and if we're just, taking our camera to capture the moment, then sometimes the moment doesn't produce amazing light. So, do you find that the more you know about photography, the less you shoot for the moment and the more you shoot for light?
No, I don't think so necessarily. I
Okay.
think I'm still much more, I shoot for the moment. I think just for my kids and for recording what I see. When I'm shooting for the light, then a lot of times it's more of a creative bend. I'm like, oh, it looks
Right.
beautiful. And then I drag a kid out there. I'm like, come on, come on, or help me set up this, or help me with this. Versus, it really is more than, oh, they're reading a book and there's great light. Perfect. Let's go for it. Or, oh, they're playing a certain way. I want to catch for that. And there's great light. Perfect. Versus if they happen to see great light, then usually it's like, hey, let's go play soccer in the backyard. Quick. The sun's setting. It's gorgeous. And I want to get your silhouette against the beautiful sun, or whatever, if that makes sense.
It does. And
Yeah.
in my house, it usually comes with, and I'll give you a dollar if you will.
I can't afford that. I do it
That
again. I'd be
that's
broke.
true. That's true. Well, and I'm almost broke and I only have one. So,
Yeah.
it's interesting. Do you ever have photos or moments rather that you don't pick up the camera because the light's just not right? Or do you,
Absolutely. Yeah,
yeah,
definitely. I
yeah.
do. I mean, I just know it's either beyond the strength of my camera, because. I know from experience now that I'm going to have to change my ISO, or I'm going to have to, you know, open my aperture wide open or whatever. And even then I know it's just not going to be enough. And then I have to decide, where's the trade-off? Is there going to be a quality of picture, or is there just going to be happy with the picture? And it really depends on what the moment is, you know, if it's a moment that I think is just so important, then I will go ahead and pick that camera up and take that picture and just go, that was the best I could do at that time with my equipment and with the light. Or if it's like, you know what, you do that every night, I'll just wait for it to be better.
Right.
Tomorrow.
This will happen again.
Exactly. I don't need to get a picture of that again. That's not a first. That's not a last. It's not even a, you know, it's a one of a million and there was nothing unique. Then I'm definitely just going to let it slide and go, I will get it better. But I didn't used to be that way. I think that's just come with experience and with knowing the limitations and with knowing the patterns of the light.
Yeah, I find that too. Like I will actually sometimes go to school events now, or, you know, if we're just going out as a family, and sometimes I will literally say, like, you know, I'm not going to have good light, so I'm going to leave my camera at home and I'm just going to experience this memory. Mm-hmm. I'm just going to be part of it and be engaged in it, which is really different for me. I used to really force it. I used to really play with my settings, you know, bump my ISO up to you know, the craziest highest number it would go, and open my aperture wide open. And yeah, I don't do that so much anymore.
Yeah, I don't either. And I think it makes it better for everyone, because then it's not me going, wait, I didn't get that just perfect. I didn't get the setting right. I missed it. Let's try again. You know, versus, you know what? It's all right. It will happen again, and life will move on, and, you know,
I'm curious, what are the events for you that you've decided are the events where you will force the photo when there's not enough light? When will you push it and just go, I'm going to get this photo no matter what?
Well, there's probably not very many of those anymore, just because in reality, if it means I'm going to upset someone, I'm definitely not going to push it, you know?
Yeah,
so if I'm
right.
going to upset one of my kiddos, but if it's, you know, like an indoor birthday party that I'm really trying to grab just at least one reminder or two reminders, you know, then I'll try to at least take something and move on. I might not take a bunch. I very seldom take my camera, like, say, indoors to like a children's museum or anything like that. I just don't even worry about indoor light there. I just kind of let it go. But usually it has to involve a special first or last momentous, you know, at least like one tooth. You just lost your tooth and it's bedtime. Just let me get a picture of your tooth in your finger, you know, or something.
Right.
That's
right.
All I want. It doesn't have to be perfect. I don't want to hear, Mom, you took all these pictures of Jacob, who's my oldest, and you took a few less of Jonah, and you took a few less of Jesse, and then there's Jeremiah and Joseph, who are going, do we even have any pictures? You know, you never took a picture of me with my first tooth, Mom. You know, that's
right.
Every mom out there who's got more than one kid is used to that mentality. And so some of those things I try really hard to make sure that I'm not dropping off for my little ones.
Exactly.
That they will have those same pictures. So those are the ones I try not to miss, if that makes sense. So
that's such a classic mom thing.
Yeah.
I can look through the photos of my family and I'm the middle of five, and you can definitely see the curve. And my poor brother, who's the youngest, he really doesn't have many photos at all.
Yeah.
And we kind of joke with him, and you know, interestingly enough, he is also the one today that likes to be photographed least. I find that really intriguing, that it wasn't part of his life. Like, I remember it being more so for me and my older siblings. It just, you know, it just didn't come out. My mom was working, like, there's things, life was just really different. And, you know, he was number five. Big deal,
right?
If you lost a tooth, we've seen many go.
Right. Exactly. And I really try to make sure that I don't do that. Really, for me, it's more my third one, because by the time my fourth one came, I was just getting a DSLR. And so everything with my fourth and fifth was kind of new and exciting. And how do I take these creative pictures? And so it's my third guy, Jesse, that he's he's got a little gap in there.
Yeah.
So
well,
I'm trying to make up for it now.
Tell Jesse it's the middle child curse. It happens to all of us.
Yeah. Well, he makes up for it on his own with his own way. So I'm not too worried about it. But yeah.
That's perfect. I love it. So when the light isn't great, we've talked about ISO. Are there any other tips or things that you do, say in the middle of the day when you go out and it's bright sunshine and you know that if you shoot into that light, every one of your kids is going to have squinty eyes and big ugly shadows under them when you see the photos on your computer. So anything that you do other than what we've already mentioned?
Not really. Because I'm just thinking if it's, let's say I'm at the Grand Canyon, so there is no shade. There is no depth.
You're not creating it.
You're not going to be able to pull them underneath something probably, So then if anything, what I would try to do is, if they've got a baseball cap, get them underneath something just to help soften that on their face. But they don't even have that. Sometimes, I've had JD stand over there. This doesn't work anymore because I have 5 kids. But those of you that've got one, this might work for you. But, I've had JD kind of stand with like a flyer or if we've got a brochure or something over their heads.
And create the shade, kind of, right.
Create the shade. That doesn't work with 5 because we don't have enough hands. We don't have enough paper. We don't, I don't carry a reflector around.
You would need the diffuser then. If you had a really large diffuser that folded up into your back pocket, you could just flip it out anywhere you went, and then you'd have these amazing photos.
Exactly. But no, I'm not going to do that.
Do you ever use Fill Flash?
I do. And I was going to say, that's the other thing I do to just brighten their face or the shadows on their face, I should say. I'm not very good at it. So that's something I really have to work at, because sometimes it works beautifully and sometimes I'm either too close and their face is even more washed out, or I'm too far away and it just, I haven't worked with that enough that I can't predict it yet. I can't go, this is going to work if I put that Fill Flash on. It's more like,
And for me, I'm really lazy. I don't want to carry around my flash in order to get that. And, with my camera, I shoot with the 5D. There is no built-in flash. There's no pop-up. So I'm not going to – I can't default to that. So it's just – there's just a practicality to it. So if I was at someplace like the Grand Canyon, I would probably just make the most of it. Although I will tell you I was at the Grand Canyon 3 years ago. And I made my husband and my son get up really, really early so we could go get the best light. They weren't happy about it, but it was gorgeous light. And they could and my husband, at least at that point, Ian would appreciate it now. I don't think he understood it then. But my husband could totally appreciate the fact that we were seeing this amazing light over the whole canyon. It was absolutely gorgeous. And, it's worth waking up an hour earlier than you would to be able to see that. It's not something I make them do every day.
Right. Yeah. No, mine, I just have the 60D. So I still have a pop-up flash. So that's usually what I use when I'm doing Fill Flash, because like you, I'm not going to carry around my speed light when I go places, unless I really think I'm someplace that I'm going to have to use it and have it. But I can't think of when I've ever done that.
I did carry mine just a couple weeks ago. It was Ian's 8th birthday. And if you may have seen on Facebook, he asked to go to Chuck E. Cheese. Yeah. And so I very reluctantly said, okay, you're only 8 once and this is what you really want to do. So I was completely prepared with my 50 millimeter lens, to have it at 1.4. I had I brought my speed light so that I could bounce it off their ceiling, because I remembered Chuck E. Cheese as this dark, dreary, scary place that would be horrible for photos. And I was completely stunned when I walked in and it was bright and amazingly lit, and my flash was completely unnecessary. It was a strange experience, but that's probably the only time, maybe a few other school events, when I've grabbed my flash to go out and about. Most of the time I just use it at home and primarily during the winter. I try to do natural light For everyday photos, the rest of the year, it seems too contrived and too in people's face to have my flash out for everyday photos.
I agree. And when I'm in the winter, or when, it's dusk in the house and I'm still trying to get a shot, for my personal preference, I'll take graininess that's created from having a high ISO over flash for me. I mean, that's the trade-off, is that I'll bump it way up if it's still something I want to take, and just know that it's a little grainy and I'm not, that's just how it is, but it's not washed out, or it's not too bright, or it's not, got the flash lights in the eyes or something. So
It's part of that everydayness, I think,
I think so.
there's something much more natural to it than if it had a flash to it. And then I think just people are more natural,
Yeah.
and I think that's, ultimately, no matter what the light is, I want that naturalness. We actually put a light on an arm. Yeah, I think it was an IKEA light. We put it over my son's bed, so in the evening we could more easily read to him. And that light has been the most amazing source of photos for me, because it gives me just enough light to get the bedtime reading shot and, the sleeping child. I went in one night and I actually turned the light on when he was already asleep, and I could hear my husband going, "No, don't do that." Like, I am doing
Never wake a
that.
sleeping child.
Exactly. And I didn't wake him. He flinched a little bit, and he kind of closed his eyes tight at one point, but I did not wake him. So
Yeah.
I will do it again. I will do it
Yeah.
again. It's a great photo because of that light.
Yeah. Well, and I do another thing, which I know you do just from looking at your pictures, is when my light's not great, and especially if the color's not great, then I will convert to black and white,
Oh,
you
yeah.
know? And so my schoolroom, for example, is this very cheery yellow, and I love it for the yellow that it creates and the cheerfulness and the bright, but it is hideous in color photos. I mean, it just creates this crazy yellow skin and yellow glow on everything. And if, somebody studies my feed, they will never see a color school picture, because that's the first thing I always do. And that's not a matter of how much light, that's just light reflecting, and all that gold light is just
Right.
too gold. And so I know you convert to black and white. Do you do that because of the color, or do you do that just because you like black and white?
Well, I am first and foremost absolutely obsessed with black and white images. I have always loved the purity of black and white, but it also makes it a really easy way to fudge when the noise is high, to be able to get that nicer look and a cleaner, sharper image by converting. So yes, I love it, but I also do use it to hide imperfections as well. There's just something about black and white that gets me. I absolutely love it. So that kind of leads me to another light question that, in terms of white balance and that color cast you mentioned, do you shoot in RAW?
I do. I do.
Yeah, as do I. As do I. I didn't always. In fact, I had this funny time about 5 years ago where I decided I am going back to just JPEG and I am not messing with RAW. And a few friends laughed at me and thought I was being ridiculous. And then I went back to RAW, and then I laughed at myself and realized I was being ridiculous. But what do you see as the greatest benefit to you for shooting in RAW? What do you love about it?
That I can just control more things on the back end. I mean, yeah, the general argument is it creates a little more work, whether you're in Photoshop or Lightroom. You got to have something that knows what to do with a raw file versus just your general JPEG. But you can just fudge and fix a few more things a little nicer, then it'll come out of your camera. And I can't trade that off. I mean, when people send me JPEGs, a family member or somebody, I'm just like, oh, if this was raw, it would beautiful. If this
Right.
was raw, we could, I could fix that white balance just a little bit more accurately instead of just trying to finagle it,
Right.
I'll take whatever anybody sends me, of course, but when I'm trying to create something, I just love having that ability that it's a true negative, that it's really the bare bones of what you need, you know, to build a picture. So
yeah, and in terms of dealing with like a color cast, like your
yeah.
yellow room, even if you're going to convert it to black and white, I find that I get a much richer black and white if I correct the color cast as much as I can first and then move to a black and white conversion. Those always just seem to have a better range of highlights and shadows and midtones than if I just go straight to a black and white conversion.
Ooh, I feel another podcast coming on with that topic.
I think we could easily do that. We could have a black and white podcast. We probably could have a raw podcast. And
oh yeah,
you know, leave us some comments in.
Yeah, let us know.
And let us know what you want to hear, because we can cover all of those. I, you know, raw is, there's so many questions about raw, and there's so much that we could talk about with raw as well as black and white. And black and white's one of those crazy things. There's so many different ways of going about it. I was working with a friend a few years ago, and she wanted a photo in black and white. And I said to her, and her husband was standing there, and I said, well, you know, it's going to take me a while because I have to figure out which way we're going to convert it in black and white. And he looked at me, he's like, well, just make it black and white. Like, oh, it's so not that simple.
Yeah.
It's not that simple at all.
No, I thought it was that simple too a few years ago. But now it's whenever you see somebody who shows you a new way, it's like, oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's great. Oh, my goodness. You know, and yeah, there's a real art and some technique involved there.
Exactly. The July inspired class, we, many, many people took their photos. We did street photography and many, many people converted to black and white. And one of the things I loved about looking through that gallery was just seeing all the different ways that people handled their conversion and all the different colors that you could actually see in the black and white. I tend to go to a black and white that has a little bit of a blue cast to it, which, you know, not everybody likes, but for me, I just end up loving just that tiny, tiny hint of blue that's added. And, you know, I think the same goes for just our how you process your photos in general. Some like, and I remember learning to, you know, go to the cooler side so that was kind of pop, making your photo pop in that way. And then we kind of moved to making it very, very golden. And,
right.
And I think I arrived with my photography when I decided where I wanted to be on that scale.
Yeah.
What does it look like for me?
Yeah.
Light's a crazy thing. Light's a crazy thing. You know, it has color, it has intensity, it has temperature. There's so much to it to consider. And I think, you know, you said it, that as you progressed in your photography, you could really see how it changed.
Yeah. Well, and I think with the black and white, like we were talking about, when you reduce it to black and white, you're reducing it only almost just to the light.
Yes.
You know, and that's one of the things that makes the black and white so beautiful, is all of a sudden now it is just light, shadow, contrast, instead of red, blue, yellow, light, shadow, contrast, you know, and all of that together. It's just down to where is the light? And
exactly.
And that's what, you know, makes a good black and white photo, which again, that's a whole nother podcast.
it is another podcast. Well, let's move on to our next segment. And this is a new segment we're just adding in. I'm super, super excited to talk about this. And we're calling it As Seen in the Gallery. So Kelly and I have both picked one photo from the CY365 gallery. And we're going to describe it and why we like it. So Kelly, do you want to start us off with the photo
sure.
that you selected? All right, go for
sure.
it.
I picked one from PJ Scott, and it's called Natural. And I loved it because it fit perfectly with what we're talking about today, and because it's an adorable little boy. It's got everything. It's got high key lighting, but it's not blown out, you know, to an obscene amount. It's got some contrast on the other side. It's got very classic colors, just soft blues, soft pinks in it, some texture with the beautiful blanket. And then that little boy is precious, and he's just kind of cuddled up on a blanket. And it's timeless. And that's one of the things that always captures me with a picture is if it feels timeless to me and if it feels like that's what I want to see a picture of my kid doing, you know, and I just keep looking at it and just thinking, oh, he looks so sweet. Oh, it's so soft. Oh, the light's just so lovely. You know?
I love too that it's a great example of window light. So it has that really bright window light coming in that exposes him really, really nicely. And you know, there's that little bit of area in the light that is blown out, so you lose detail. But when you've got backlight like that or really heavy side light, you know, it's one of those compromises. It's just one of those things that you give up, and I don't think it takes away from the photo in any way.
I don't think so. And it's not so, you know, blown out that, I mean, you can still see some of the detail in it, and it's a very soft blown out. You know, it's not that little bright glare that sometimes you get when something's high key or blown out. So
right.
I just,
that's a great point.
Yeah. So it's just real soft feel to it, I think. So yeah. Great job, PJ Scott. I keep looking at it. So
nice. Yeah, I'm glad you picked it because I hadn't seen it. There are so many photos in the gallery. I sometimes, you know, I miss them. So it's fun to see one that is a great photo that stands out that I wouldn't have seen otherwise.
Right.
My photo is from Westchester Scrapper, and it is titled August 11th Sunflower. And it's from the day that Sunflower was the prompt.
Oh,
wasn't that a fun day? That was such a great day to look in the gallery. And you just saw it overflowing with sunflowers from every different angle. There were, you know, from behind, from the side, a portion, the whole thing. There was such a cool variety. And that was what I loved about Westchester Scrapper's Sunflower. It is a profile of the sunflower on the left-hand side of the frame, and there's a beautiful green bokeh background, and the thing that tied it to today's episode for me was the light that you can see through the green leaves, and it's such a beautiful light that you can see, you know, you can see right through them, so you see all the veins and all the detail. And then the light is also hitting the head of the sunflower that is, you know, you're seeing in profile. So it almost took me a moment to even realize what the photo was about. But then I felt like you could really see that the light is like almost drawn right to the face of the sunflower. And just a really beautiful way of capturing attention and then a really unique way, a really unique take on a prompt that a lot of people, you know, interpreted in the same way. You know, here's a sunflower.
Right.
And she just showed it in such a cool way.
So yeah.
Great angle.
I'm curious, Simone, if you're listening, I'm curious to know what is the background? I mean, because it is such a smooth blur of green. I'm going, is it a wall? You know, it
exactly.
can't, but the lighting is so beautiful. I'd love to know the backdrop because it is just a soft, beautiful, mossy green, at least on my computer.
It is on mine too.
It's perfect. It doesn't distract. It adds so much to the shot. And yeah.
I have lots of green in my garden, and I don't have anywhere that I could make that green and be that even. So I would be interested in hearing how she got that. So hopefully she'll leave us a comment in the notes, and we'll be able to see what her thinking was behind it. It's such a cool photo. Yeah. Excellent. So we will be back again with As Seen in the Gallery. I think it's just a fun way of highlighting some of the people from the community since we have so many amazing photographers in the community. All right. So let's go ahead, Kelly, and move on to what's in your bag. And I'll just ask, what's in your bag? What's in your bag this lately? What are you using?
Well, you know, last time I talked about Lightroom, and Lightroom is my best friend. I don't live without it. And I just found a new app that's called Mosaic.
Ah.
And I do you use Mosaic? Have you looked at it before?
Well, I use so many that I'm actually checking on my phone right now to see if it's one that I have.
Okay. Well, this one, basically what it does is it mirrors your catalog on your iPhone.
What?
And it's amazing. It's amazing. Now, you can't do anything but look at them, but you can actually look at it in the exact same structure that you have on your catalog. And it does for free, it does up to 2,000 images. If you want more than 2,000 images or like your entire catalog, then I think it's like $6.99 a month. And then you can go up even higher and they'll back up your complete raw files and et cetera. I'm just doing the free for right now. But I love it because, like I said, I can see my catalog as is versus Flickr. I don't always upload every single thing or, you know, different sites that I give to different people. But this, it just mirrors it. And it seems to be working really nicely. So I just wow. put it on maybe like a week and a half ago. Mm-hmm. So I'm still learning the ins and outs of it, but I've been enjoying it. And I didn't have any problems with it. It all did everything it was supposed to do exactly the way they said it would do. I didn't.
Wow. So do you can then use it as a backup source is what you said.
Well, you have to pay for the backup site.
Okay. Okay.
This is just, it mirrors it. So you can pull up, for instance, when I go in and look at it, it will show me the last 2000 pictures, the most recent 2000 pictures in my catalog. And then I can sort those by different collections or if they're starred or based on that. So I can pull up a different collection without having to already have loaded up, you know, to Flickr or someplace else.
Right.
And
In theory, I could create a catalog of all of my best photos, and that's all that lives in that catalog, and then I'd be able to see them on my phone.
Yes, if they're within the first 2,000 of your catalog, because it only 2,000 is the most recent 2,000 pictures you've taken. Now, if you want to pay, like I said, I think it's $6.99 a month, and it will do your entire catalog, or they give you a break if you buy, you know, 12 months at a time. And then you can see all of them, and then you could definitely pull from your favorites for, you know, your 10,000 catalog or whatever.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you have to download it onto your computer, download it onto your phone. You know, I didn't make enough notes because I'm still too new at this to remember if it's Android or iPhone or, you know, which way it goes. It's definitely iPhone because that's what I have. So I know it works on iPhone. I can't remember. I could probably look real quick and see, but
that's pretty cool. I'm going to have to check it out. That's not when you said mosaic, I had a totally different idea in mind. That's
like
so
a collage
cool.
maker or something.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. But that's pretty cool. I hadn't even, it's one of those things that I didn't even know that I needed.
Yeah.
But I like the idea of being able to pull my catalog in. Of course, my catalog right now for 2013 is 8,000 photos.
Yeah,
so
see, that's what I mean for you. You need to play with it and see, maybe play with the 2,000. And if you like it, then join to get all of them, you know, or something.
Right.
It's at mosaicarchive.com. That's where you're going to find it. And I was looking to see here if it says, if it's for which
if it's for Android
as well. If it's for Android. It looks like it's just for Apple products right now because it says for your iPhone, iPad, and web.
Okay.
So I don't see anything about Android users. Sorry. But it works very well with what I've been doing with it so far, which is basically the ability to pull it up and look at it. You know, it's nothing – you can't work on Lightroom photos. You can't tag them or anything like that. It just mirrors it so you can, you know, just look at them.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah,
I like that. I think that's kind of cool to look into. And we'll link up everything for that in the show notes from today's show. So my pick today, too, what's in my bag is also Lightroom related. But it's actually a tool in Lightroom. And I just want to talk about Clarity a bit. It's one of the options that you have in the develop mode. And I'm finding that I'm using it a lot lately. And, you know, it's one of those that I think sometimes with Lightroom, we use a piece of it, but we don't really know what it does. So with Lightroom, it is going to control the contrast in the mid-tone of your image. And we've talked about mid-tone a lot today. So it adds contrast as well to the edges. So you have to be really careful when you're using it because it can give you kind of a harsh, sharp edge around your photo. But the nice thing is it doesn't change your highlights or your shadows at all. It doesn't touch those. It just touches your mid-tones. So when you change it in just small increments, and I usually only change it like 10 or 20 at the most. And when you do change it, if you go up, it's going to sharpen your photo a little bit in the midtones. And if you go down, it's going to soften skin some. So you get a softer skin look. So that's my pick, something that I'm using a lot, but I use it really, you know, very, very mildly. I don't go to extremes. But if you want to see how it works, go to the 100 side, either plus or negative, and you can really see what it does.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of clarity. I love clarity. No, I'm terrible. I have to make sure. Sometimes I have to bounce around different screens because – you know, it'll look great on my beautiful iMac. And then my husband will be like, what did you do to this picture? When he pulls it up on his old screen. And I'm like, oh my goodness, it's horrid on that screen. And I hate that when something looks good on one screen and you shift it to a different screen and it's like, oh my, back that baby back down a little bit. And
yeah, that's a little too extreme.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And I have to say, I'm guilty of what I use it more than anything for is eyes. I'm guilty of just putting a little brush on each of the eyes and adding a little bit of clarity to those eyes. And I'll leave the rest of the picture alone a lot of times, but it just kind of brightens the eyes, sharpens them, draws you right into their eyes.
And, nice. Now we all know your secret.
That's my secret. It's not really a secret because I think half everybody else does it too, probably.
I think so too.
You know.
Yeah, and I'm totally the lazy editor. I don't go to that much detail in my editing. Maybe I should, but I just use it overall for my whole photo, and I like the way it will change the look if I just bump it up just a tiny, tiny bit.
Right.
And, you know, like between 10 and 20 usually, and gets me a nice look happening.
Right.
So, Kelly, what are you photographing this week? What's going on in your life that you're where are you pointing your lens?
Well, you know, we just got back from the lake, so I took some pictures at the lake. Last year I took 470 some, and this year I took 70. So,
wow.
Nearly as many. And I think it was because my entire family was there, as in I have tons of nephews and nieces, you know, and with my 5 crew, that makes it a pretty good amount of kiddos. And I can't, I'm just too busy being a mom and being an aunt. And if I'm taking pictures, then I am not engaging, you know, and
right.
I just stepped out of the situation and it just wasn't worth it this year. So I took a few that I thought was, you know, interesting, but instead of being the regular, kind of, you know, photojournalist that I usually am and taking pictures all the time and snapping, I really cut it down. And I got to tell you though, I have this niece that she said, Aunt Kelly, she's only 3. Aunt Kelly, come take a picture of me. Come take a picture of me. Okay. All right, Gracie, I'm coming. And she looked at me and she goes, Aunt Kelly, you're always taking pictures. That's your talent, Aunt Kelly.
Oh.
And it was so stinky cute. I'm like, well, of course I'll take your picture, you know? And, but 3 years old, that's your talent. And I don't know if it's my talent necessarily, but I thought, you know, she sees that Aunt Kelly's the one who's always got a camera in her hand most of the time. And so anyway, that's what I took a lot of pictures of. And now we're starting school, so now I'm taking pictures of kids with mopey faces and, you know.
Yeah, the disappointment of
grouchy
summer,
you know.
Ending.
Exactly. What about you?
I am actually headed to the Jelly Belly factory.
Oh, I'm like jelly beans?
Yeah, the Jelly Beans factory. It's about 45 minutes from my house. And I'm going to meet Jocelyn Kutchins, who...
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, she is on her trip across the United States as she moves from Hawaii to Alabama. And so I am going to meet her family tomorrow. Ian and I are going to head over to the Jelly Belly factory, and we're going to take the tour and meet them, and it should be fun. And I am going to take my camera and I'm going to take it inside. I do believe it's a fairly well-lit place. And see what we
can
do.
Have you been before?
I have. It's been a really long time, like before Ian time. But I have been. So it should be fun. And fun to meet her. She is for those of you who don't know, she's a scrapbooker, and she's an amazingly talented scrapbooker, and also blogs, and I'll link up her blog as well. So it'll be fun to meet her in person.
Doesn't she do like little badges and little
She does amazing flair. She creates really cool flair.
She does.
And and she led a 365 group on Facebook last year and this year, and it's been really fun to connect with that group. It's a private group she has, and so I've been able to connect with them, and they use the CY365 prompts for what they do. So it'll be fun to meet her in person. So the internet world gets a little bit smaller when you get to see each other face to face. So that's what I'm doing. And of course, you know, remodel mess. I've been documenting that whole process, and looking forward to the day that I can just look back at those photos and enjoy them as the past.
I think my favorite one was the comment about the joists, the floor joists being cut through, the ceiling joists. Did that come out well?
Yes, we're in that process. That was my office is upstairs, and right next to it there is a bathroom. And that bathroom at this moment in time has absolutely nothing in it, including, you know, no drywall, nothing. And they have reinforced everything so that the floor doesn't cave in and my house doesn't, you know, my second floor doesn't become my first floor. And in the next couple of weeks, that's going to get all fixed. And then gradually we'll put that room back together, since that was a little unexpected. They had literally in multiple places had just sawed right through them to put the plumbing in at some point. That's the beauty of living in an 85-year-old house. We have remnants of many, many people's unpermitted, uninformed work going on.
Not real safe in earthquake land, I would imagine. So.
Well, you know, luckily I'm in California, but I am not in earthquake California. We don't live near a fault. I've only felt one earthquake in Sacramento ever. And so we're pretty fortunate that way. It'd have to be a pretty big earthquake. But, you know, over time, as things settle, I'd like to know that my house is going to stand up. The length of time of this remodel is not about me doing amazing things with my house. It's about me making sure that my house doesn't fall in. So that's where my camera is headed this week as well.
Okay.
So, Kelly, thanks for being here with me again, and thanks for everyone for listening to podcast number 2. We're excited to continue this and really appreciate the wonderful feedback that everybody provided about our first episode, and we hope to continue to bring you great content. Share with us your comments, your questions, and what you'd like us to cover in future episodes. With that, have a great afternoon, Kelly, and I will see you again next month when we record our third episode. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day.